Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm excited to introduce you to this panel of hilarious comedians. Chris Womack is a JMU professor who's been educating and entertaining students for 28 years in the classroom and now taking his comedy off campus. Jesse Hill Jr. is a comedian hailing from Richmond. His likes are dogs, the beach, and hamburgers. He's not fond of anything pumpkin spice flavored. Sarah Med is also a Richmond-based comic who produced Beans, Bits, and Brews at Crossroads Coffee and Ice Cream and will soon take the show to other venues in the coming months. Ahmed's comedy revolves around people, places, and things, and sometimes more. Jared Kassebaum originally hails from Indiana. This LA-based comedian charms audiences with his unique blend of naive storytelling and witty wordplay. He runs a popular monthly show in Los Angeles and has performed all around the country. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
So good to be here.
Yes.
So good to be here.
It is good to be here. I'm very delighted to share you all with the laughers. It is super exciting. And laughers, we have something super special for you today because this just in, Jared Kassebaum just got engaged. Woohoo!
Thank you so much. That is true. That is true.
It is true. And we congratulate you, Jared. To celebrate, we thought we would do something fun for him and his fiance, Annalise, to celebrate. On today's podcast, we have two married comedian couples with myself and Chris, as well as Jesse and Sarah. After the panel interview, we're going to hand it over to Jared to host a newlywed game of sorts to ask us what he's always wanted to know. He may walk away thinking he's made the best decision of his life, or he'll run for the hills. We'll see. So let's get this started, laughers, and have some fun. Ready, comedians?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do this. I want them to, laughers out there, to get to know each of you a little bit. So I have to know, where did you do your first stand-up comedy set, and how did it go? Let's do ladies first. Sarah, can you share with people what that experience was like for you?
Yes. I feel like we've outnumbered the men on here because you're the host of the show. I really like it.
Woman power.
Exactly. I love when there's a woman in charge. I love being asked this question because, like, you don't reflect on it yourself, I think, enough as a comic. But it was a comedy at Pi in Richmond, Virginia. That place, bar, restaurant is no longer open. But yeah, comedy at Pi Saturday. It was every Saturday night, really late show, definitely a dive bar vibe. And it went well. It went well because I felt like I had nothing to lose. And the crowd was super, super nice. I think they could tell I was nervous, holding a piece of paper, hand shaking. But yeah, it gave me false expectations of how good I was going to do, for sure.
That's a great story. I love that. How about you, Jesse? Now, this is her other half, Jesse Hill. How did it go for you?
The complete opposite. So the first time I ever did comedy, I did it at the Funny Bone in Henrico, Virginia.
Wow.
And it was what you call a bringer show. So I had to bring enough people in order to perform. And I thought, you know, I'll bring 5-10 people and there will be 50 people there and, you know, I'll do my thing, but it was completely sold out. I think that theater probably holds 150, 200 people, something like that. So I went up there totally unprepared, probably had a few too many drinks beforehand. And I don't know if there's a video of it out there, but I would pay half of my life savings for that never to come out. So not great, but it was only up from there. So.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you don't want that showing up on YouTube sometime later. That's what you're saying to me. Oh, my gosh. How about you, Chris Womack? How was it? What was your first experience like?
Well, my first experience was only a month ago. I feel like before the Daytona 500, somebody's interviewing the race car drivers, and then they found out I drove fast one time, so they threw me in there. That's how I feel on this podcast. But so I've only done 2 5-minute sets in my life. The audience should know that. So it was a month ago. I remember it. I remember it very well.
Like it was so yesterday.
It was yesterday, because it kind of was. I did an open mic at Three Brothers Brewery that Christopher Cantrell, who you've had on the podcast, hosts once a month. And it seemed to go well. You were there. I think it went well.
It definitely went well. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely went. It went so well that I told him if he would do the same 5 minutes, he could do 5 minutes on the next X2 comedy show. And he did do that last week and slayed the machine again. So as long as he keeps going like that, he'll still get a little time on each show, you know?
2-time Daytona 500 winner. Not just one. That's something.
Right. He does. He's a natural. He really is. So it's exciting to have all of you on here. How about you, Jared? We didn't get the answer to that question from you. We got to hear this.
I love that you said, as long as you do the exact same 5 minutes, I'll book you again. Because I do think that's when you see something happen, you're like, don't mess that up the next time. So I'm from Indiana originally. I live in Los Angeles now, like you said in the intro. But so my first ever open mic was at a comedy club open mic called Morty's Comedy Joint, which no longer exists in Indiana, as a bummer. But it was one of the few comedy clubs in Indianapolis and central Indiana. And it was a 6-minute open mic, which at this point, looking back, just feels way too long for my first time. I was wearing shorts, as I didn't realize that was a rule at that point, or like an unspoken rule that you're not supposed to wear shorts on stage. And I remember somebody came up to me after the show. It went all right. It didn't go well, but it gave me enough laughs that I was like, I want to do that again, you know? And then somebody came up to me after the show though, and was like, hey, I don't know if you know, but like, nobody's going to take you seriously if you're wearing shorts. And I was like, oh, that's good to know. So that was a nice, helpful little mentor moment.
All right.
That was about 7 years ago now. 7 years ago.
That's a
tough I did person. Not know that. I wore shorts to my first open mic. So
There we go.
I'm doing it again Thursday. Sorry, I'm not sorry, Jared. It's going to be hot outside. I'm wearing shorts.
If it's an outdoor show, I do think if it's an outdoor show, I think there might be exceptions to that. But right. But otherwise, unless you're fluffy, I think that's the general rule.
Unless you're fluffy.
The comedian named Fluffy.
Oh, okay.
Who's like kind of known for wearing shorts. He's up there wearing shorts every show. That's a part of his shtick a little bit.
All right. I'm going to have to look that one up. I'm going to have to look him up. Now here's something. This is going to be great. I have to know. When your family and friends found out you started comedy, were they surprised or said, that makes sense? How about you, Sarah? How was that for you?
Friends around here, because I had like kind of just moved to Richmond and I was quiet, they were like, they looked worried for me. they were like, can you repeat that? Like, you shouldn't know. And so it was like a big really, and then followed by a lot of support. My parent family, if we talk about family, I'll be specific about my parents, they were like, okay, like we don't really want to know. Just kind of keep us out of it. It scared them. So to sum it up, there wasn't a lot of excitement around it. The excitement was really just coming from me. But that changed, thankfully.
Yes, absolutely. How about for you, Jesse?
Well, my mom was at my first show, and she has not come to any since then. So not great. But my mom, she would go to more shows if she could. My dad's been to a handful. My dad's ex-military and stuff like that, so I don't think he really understands why his son is trying to be a successful comedian, because there's no like health insurance or retirement or anything like that in comedy. So yeah, I'm basically a big disappointment.
Well, I don't think so. That's why you're on this show. So how about you, Chris?
I feel like it was both, because people have been telling me I should, like, you know, everybody keeps telling me, oh, you should do one of those shows with Dawn. But I've been saying no for so long that I think that they were surprised that I finally did, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, Christopher Cantrell, he's been telling him for 2 years that he's going to do 5 minutes. He's going to do 5 minutes. He's going to do, and then he finally showed up. So we surprised Christopher when we showed up the open mic, and you said you were going to do 5 minutes. He was like, what? Yeah. It was really great. How about you, Jared?
I think I had a couple of friends that were pretty supportive, but my parents were very cautious. I remember my mom said something along the lines of like, "Ooh, you sure you'd still be able to get a job if they find out you're trying to do stand up?" Or, you know, like, I just a little bit more of that sensitivity. Same reaction when I got a tattoo, though. My dad was like, "Nobody's going to hire you now." So, but then I had a couple of friends who were really supportive. My grandpa, though, was super supportive, and I remember being super surprised. I almost got the vibe that he had always wanted to be a comedian, and like, he like sees me as like a way to kind of live that out a little bit. And so he, after I did my first open mic and he heard about it, he got me the Judd Apatow book called Sick in the Head, where it's like interviews with comedians. And I just remember feeling really encouraged by that, because that was kind of his way of saying, I want you to keep going.
Is that your paternal or maternal grandfather?
It's my mom's dad. He actually passed away a couple of years ago, but yeah, that was my mom's dad.
Oh, what was his name?
His name was Paul Gunderman.
Paul Gunderman, shout out to Paul and his memory today for that encouragement to you. That's really sweet. Now, this tattoo, I need to know, where is this tattoo? What is this tattoo you have?
I've got a few on my shoulder.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. At this point, it's a few. The first one was this one.
Okay.
Which is Psalm 63:3 from the Bible.
Nice.
And then a Hebrew word from that verse. And then I've kind of ended up surrounding that with some other meaningful things. And then another thing there.
Okay. Will you be showing off your tattoos at the show?
You know, I don't have any jokes about my tattoos. It feels a little self-indulgent. Okay. But, you know, we can talk about it. I'm staying in your guest bedroom, so we can chat after the show.
Yeah, that's right. We will definitely do that. I have another question. I find the answer to this is so fun when I ask the various comedians this, is who are some of your favorite stand-up comics and what qualities do they have you admire? Sarah.
And all right. Yeah, I just had to unmute myself and not stall at all. I'm not going to let this question, I feel very vulnerable at answer always. And probably just because I'm indecisive. Maria Bamford is, I can watch her just over and over, and I could watch her same set over and over and over again, because just her weirdness. Her weirdness, you can't make that up. You can only manifest that from the human being that you are, and she's really put, you know, her life out there on the stage. I think it's helped a lot of people too. And yeah, she's hilarious. She's super weird, does great voices, fantastic. So she inspires me to do character stand up. And she's the only comedian that ever did. And George Carlin for sure, because I agree with every single thing he's ever said. It's like, those are like my core beliefs. And it's amazing. I feel like, yeah, that was just cool that he was doing that. I mean, it was only, when did he pass away? 2004. But I feel like it was kind of controversial for his time to, you know, be joking about what he did. And just, yeah, respect him so much. Love him. He's so real. And Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle. Just, even though I didn't like a couple of his, you know, newer stuff that came out as much as the older stuff, it's like, yeah, but if you look at the average, he's the best. So yeah.
His whole piece of work is impressive for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Jesse.
Yeah. I think piggybacking off of Sarah, Maria Bamford is an early favorite of mine. Also, Joan Rivers is probably one of my comedic heroes. I think she just, she like lived comedy. She never was not funny to me. I like different voices and stuff like that too. So like Brian Regan, I've been listening to a lot lately, Jim Gaffigan, things like that. The list could go on and on, but yeah, those are just a few of my favorites.
And what qualities do you like about one or all of them?
I think with particularly like Brian Regan, just the performance is as funny as the jokes are. Yes. So like, I think that is such a unique skill that only a handful of people on the earth really have. So when you get that sort of combination of good joke writing and being able to perform it well, it's just, it's magical in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more. I love that. I love that answer. How about you, Chris?
Oh man. So I'm going to try to make this quick. Cause as you know, I've loved stand-up comedy my whole life. Like you know, I had probably equal in this, you know, late 70s, early 80s when I was like a kid. I had as many stand-up comedy albums as I did heavy metal albums. It was just, you know, so it's hard. And anyway, so just kind of thinking about this and just shooting from the hip. First of all, I'm not going to say this one, Sarah, you did, but Sarah, I have to say, I saw George Carlin in 1985. And I've been to a lot of stand-up performances. I woke up the next day and my abs were sore. It's like I've never had anybody make me laugh like that. Like, I was thinking about it the next day, like, how did he do that? I laughed so hard that I got an ab workout. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, so that was amazing. So yeah, I'll just have, I mean, anybody can do that to me. I gotta, you know, have up there. Eddie Murphy, man. I know it was a short-lived stand-up career, but I was in high school when those two in college when those two, you know, stand-up performances hit and came out in album and movie form. And you just, high schoolers were walking down the hall quoting those things. It was so brilliant. It was just, you know, you couldn't, it was so different that you didn't even know what to do with it, but it just, he just killed. I love John Mulaney. I love John Mulaney because John Mulaney doesn't make any sense. He doesn't look funny. He's quick and yeah, he's a good writer, but his show's not packed full of one-liners. Yeah, he's a storytelling comic, but not exactly, but he just does him. And I don't even know how he came up with that, but it's brilliant. I love Sebastian Maniscalco. He seems just like a goofy guy, but what he does is his persona is just your average guy trying to get through life that's annoyed by things. And he kind of brings you in on that. And I just love that. He just kills me. And he's not in my top, but I just have to say, Dawn and I found this guy on YouTube, Lakeland Patterson. His name to anybody. I just want to see that guy. Like we will find little blurbs on YouTube where you can't even, it's not even a video. It's somebody, you know, taped it at his stand up. He's amazing. If anybody gets
it bad.
He's so good.
Cool.
He's an LA guy. I've seen him around here before.
Have you seen him? Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. He's really good.
Yeah.
Lakeland Patterson.
Yes, Lakeland Patterson. Okay. Yeah, I have a dream to bring him here. I even know what kind of show I want to
bring him with, Jared.
I know what kind of venue I want for that one. We'll just kind of keep it on the down low right now. But Lakeland, if you're hearing me, I want to talk to your agent. So, yeah, those are great answers. How about you, Jared?
Yeah, I think it for me, it kind of goes in phases too, because I think growing up, I in a pretty conservative home, I was only allowed to listen to like Brian Regan and Jim Gaffigan because they were clean, you know? So those are definitely like early influences. I know this isn't necessarily stand-up, but the biggest influence I think on my comedic sensibilities is Colbert. I would get home from middle school and high school every single day of the week, all 7 years of those years of my life, and watch The Last Night's Colbert Report when it was on Comedy Central that I had taped because it was too late and my parents wouldn't let me stay up. So that was, I think, the biggest singular impact. And then around that same time, I started getting into Pete Holmes. And he's to this day still one of my favorites. When he does shows around LA, I always try to go. Pete Holmes and his podcast are just, they've been a staple of my life since early college. And then specifically a podcast interview where Pete interviews Sinbad from like 2014. That was incredibly influential. And that was like the day I remember deciding to sign up for my first open mic was listening to that podcast. And it was listening to Sinbad talk about his early stand-up experiences. And I was like, whoa, there's no way I can't try this. At least once, just try it. And Sinbad's so funny. I remember just being a kid thinking the best Christmas movie ever is Jingle All the Way. I don't know if you guys have seen that Christmas movie. Yeah. That's it's an objectively bad movie, yeah. But he is phenomenal. I just think, I don't know. He's always stood out to me so much. And then lately, I would say it's been this British comedian named James Acaster. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's got like 4 Netflix specials. He's super good. Highly recommend. And then an Irish comedian named David O'Doherty, who does the absolute best alt piano comedy that I've ever seen. Just
really,
I'll watch his sets on repeat on YouTube. Yeah, David O'Doherty. He barely ever comes over to the States because he just tours Europe all the time. But his stuff from the Edinburgh Fringe Fest and his stuff from different kind of European stuff has just always been so top notch, and that's influenced a lot of my writing. So I think for those two guys lately, it's been because of their really concise word choice and the way they write bits that. Yeah, that's really impressed me.
I love those recommendations. We're going to have to look those up, Chris. Those are good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to be Googling those comics for sure. Now, where do you keep, each of you keep your jokes, and how do you put your set together? Let's start with, we're going to mix up just a little bit. Let's start with you, Jesse.
Let's see. So I usually keep mine in a notebook. I have always been a bad student. So usually when I do a set, I put it together right before the show starts. I just feel like I have more, I don't know, I have more luck than if I think about it days on end, I may overthink it. So I think, you know, 30 minutes before the show, I'll write the jokes that I want to do. And maybe some edits here and there, but I've always been that kind of test taker too. Like, yeah, this looks right. All right, let me go home now. So that's pretty much how I work.
Okay. All right. How about you, Sarah?
Yeah, I have to say it's so charming to me. Like when he says I'm a bad student, because it's so true. But he's like, oh, this is going to make me throw up. We're all going to just blah. He's a brilliant person. He really is. And so it's like, I know, and I'll just like watch his brain kind of work before a show. And I'm like, oh crap. He's going to go up there and do just fine. And meanwhile, I'm like a madman in my notebook. And it's like, okay, that's when you know someone's, you got to be somewhat good at what you do. If a stranger, like if I unfortunately passed or something and people were going through my stuff and they found like Jesse's toenails, like saved in trash bags in my closet or something, they'd be less alarmed than the number of notebooks I have that are like, just, oh, here's a set here from like yesterday. And then on this page 25 pages later, it's like a complete just stream of consciousness writing with some journaling in there too from 6 months ago or something like that. So I'm very disorganized when it comes to where my jokes are stored, but I have them documented and I know what I'm taking with me to a show. I'll have at least that notebook with me and the jokes written down. I have something to write with, something to write on. And let's see, was that, how do I put it together? By saying it out loud and then recording it a couple of times and seeing what order I like. And it tends to change about, I'd say, 8 or 9 times before I actually get on stage. So that anxiety is really good for you. I recommend all of you do it. It keeps you energized.
Indeed. It does. How about you, Chris?
Well, yeah, in my vast sets that I prepared. So actually, I don't know if it was because I told Christopher that I would do his open mic, or I just had it in the back of my mind, hey, yeah, maybe someday, but I've liked helping you write over the years. So I had over time kept this Word document where I put, you know, ideas for jokes or bits or whatever. And so we used that to get the set that you made me keep the same. And I prepared for it. So I wrote out the set and I prepared for it. I figured, well, the only thing I have to compare this to is when I give a talk at a conference. Like when I teach, I'm a lot more off the cuff, but when I give a talk at a conference, you know, you got to be tight. You got to know that you're done in 30 minutes or whatever time they give you for the conference talk that you're supposed to give. And so there, I just like have some points that I know I'm going to, you know, my 10 points or whatever it is I know I'm going to make. And then I practice saying what I'm going to say, kind of like Sarah said, but I don't record it, but I just, and then kind of saying it out loud and going through it. So that's what I did with the little 5 minute set. So I guess that's my process. Lord knows. I don't know.
It changes for people a little bit. Yeah. Some people are really great at writing in their head. It sounds like Jesse does that.
Yeah.
I have another headliner comic who's worked for us a couple of times, and he can write in his head. And so he has an idea of a certain number of jokes he wants to do, even knows what the topic is. And then he can almost really literally write from stage. It's pretty amazing to watch. Yeah. How about you, Jared?
And yeah, I started keeping a notebook for jokes in college, like one of the pocket-sized notebooks.
Yeah.
And I though very much like Sarah, it can all, sometimes it's I'm writing jokes and sometimes I'm journaling. I'm a big journaler. I do like the kind of morning pages type practice that a lot of people have talk about different places. But like, so sometimes if I'm like at a coffee shop, whip it out and just like stream of consciousness, but also jokes. And then I always write out my set list at the least in that notebook before I go on stage, at least once, if not twice, because I'd like to think I can remember the punchlines, but sometimes the way you get to the punchline, I don't always like have it the same way. And then you end up stumbling into a better way to tell the joke. So I think that's a big part of my process, is trying to kind of memorize like the thing I know that ends the joke, but then giving myself the room to kind of find it each time on stage. And then you kind of realize like, oh, this is the better way to get to that punchline or not. And then I also use the notes app on my phone quite a bit. But I think a lot of the reason I did the writing notebook that I've stuck with for the most part is because in college, so many professors like wouldn't let me be on my phone. And I had to, and so I was like, I'm gonna make it look like I'm taking notes, but I'm just gonna be writing jokes. And then that just kind of stayed with me.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it sounds like you guys have a little bit of different process of writing and practicing. So it's all very different. Yeah, I'm a bit ADD. And I have, you know, some issue with that. So I write them all out and then have set lists. And a way I practice actually is once I got the set list and I know the jokes I'm going to do, I actually get in the car and drive around town and practice them that way. It's exactly what I do. And it works for me. So
yeah. I go on a lot of walks and in kind of similar, not driving, but pretty much the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something about that physical movement and just that connects for me and it makes it work. So it's a lot of fun. Here's a great, fun question. What is the funniest joke you've ever heard? What is the funniest joke you've ever heard? I'm giving them a moment to think about that. And they're thinking. And we will start with Chris.
You know, I never remember like one-liner jokes. I never do. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? So I'm a terrible person to ask that to. So one of the only jokes I remember, this isn't my favorite joke. Well, I guess it is the only one I like tend to remember. It's kind of a dad joke. You guys have probably heard it too, because it's like old, but all right. So screwdriver walks into a bar. The bartender looks at him and says, "Hey, we got a drink named after you." And the screwdriver looks at him and says, "You have a drink named Steve?"
That's what you remember.
These and other top pieces of comedy you can find at an X2 comedy show.
Who was it that booked you on? I'm sorry, can I get your name?
I promise that's not going to make it. And
it's not going to make it in an X2 show. Yeah. But if we make light of it, it definitely will. We like to have fun at X2 comedy shows. Yeah. All right. How about you, Sarah?
I mean, I was on the edge of my seat till the punchline. I really was. This is not going to be the most, I just can't pull it out of there. It's somewhere down in there, but I'm going to say these have to be at least my top 10. I'm going to do two because the one's really, it's a quote from The Office. I love The Office. I know that's very common. Jesse will tell you. Sweet. Jesse may call it a sickness. The amount of time. And I love it. And I have no regrets. And Michael Scott, he can be insufferable, but eventually you realize just the ingenious of the jokes, the lines that are written for him and his character. It's so consistent. He plays it Steve Carell plays it just impeccably. It hurts.
Agree.
Yes. And I've seen it on t-shirts now. I'm like, oh, this one's overplayed, but he says, I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. And it actually is a kind of a slow burner. And you're like, gosh darn it, that's good. it's good. And it's got to be also top 10 Chappelle's joke about, how is anyone questioning that Marilyn Monroe and JFK didn't have a thing when she went to the White House and sung Happy Birthday? And then Dave Chappelle does the impression and it's like, Happy Birthday, Mr. And just seeing this like very androgynous man transform into a woman, a Marilyn Monroe impression for a moment, and then picturing just the ridiculous that and that they were, I'm sorry to the Kennedy, Foundation, but when I saw that Apollo, Dave Chappelle, that so many golden nuggets in that set, and I'd say that one is one of my faves. So.
Oh, great! Thanks, Sarah. How about you, Jesse?
Yeah, I think I'm similar to Sarah, where it's like it would be like picking my favorite song. Like I have probably 200 songs that I think are my favorite. So jokes are kind of similar in that vein. I guess if I was to pick one, I kind of like rant humor. So Lewis Black and George Carlin, capturing the just insanity of the human race is just fantastic. I remember I saw Lewis Black live and he was talking about the humidity and how that changes the temperature. So the weathercasters will go, it's 87 today, but with the heat index, it feels like 98. And it's like, well, then it's 98. Like if it feels like it's 98, then it's 98. And it's the same thing with the wind chill. It's 34, but with the wind chill, it's 20. It's like, all right, then just say it's 20, because we're not going to be able to decipher, oh, this is because it's so windy that it feels like it's 20. So any sort of, you know, George Carlin ranting about consumerism or religion or anything like that, of course, just really makes my heart flutter.
Nice. Yeah, we used to live in Michigan. Yeah. And it was always, you know, whatever degrees, but 20, you know, it's like, it's 20 degrees outside, but it's 15 below with the wind chill factor.
Right.
Yeah, we'd always say that. Just say 15 below. It's okay.
Right.
Yeah, it's okay. How about you, Jaren?
Yeah, I think what comes to my mind in this is from another LA guy. He actually just had a little mini special on the Ringers show, which is like the Bill Burr Comedy Central show. His name is Luke Schwartz, but he's a guy out here I really respect. He has this one-liner. He's not even mainly a one-liner guy, but he's got this one-liner where he says, I went to a grammar conference recently. People were really famous there about in the grammar community. It was a real whom's whom. And every time I hear him do that joke, I just laugh so hard. And I remember just texting all my friends when I first heard that joke. I was like, you've got to hear this great grammar joke. So that's the type of stuff I really appreciate. The other one that comes to mind is the Gary Goldman Conan set, where it's 5 minutes on how the states got their abbreviations. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Gary Goldman, I probably should have mentioned him in the people I look up to. I love Gary Goldman for his writing, but he has got this whole bit about how states get their abbreviations, but it's totally fictitious. But he's like telling this fake historical account of it. I don't want to spoil it. It's very good.
Well, we'll look that one up too. We got quite a list going here, don't we, Chris? Got quite a list.
Oh, by the way, I just have to say, I didn't know we could say, you know, a bit that a comic did for this question. So I just have to give a quick shout out. Eddie Murphy's routine, where he's calling home after he gets into a fight and he's praying that his mom answers the phone because it's Friday and he knows his dad will be drunk, and he does an impression of his dad answering the phone. Gets me every time. Must have heard that thing 50 times. Gets me every time.
We'll have to watch that one too.
I can't use my phone.
That one again. I love that one too. Well, you guys, this has been so fun. This is also, I have to say, a great segue into the game portion of today's special episode to celebrate the newly engaged comedian of this crew who asked his lovely Annalise to take the plunge. Congrats to you too, Annalise. We know you're listening. And now, without further ado, laughers, we give you your newlywed Game of Sorts host, Jared Kassebaum, the man whom Annalise bravely said yes to. This is his moment to ask all his burning questions. So take it away, Jared.
Thank you so much, Don. Thank you so much. Thank you all for coming to this newlywed Zoom/podcast game. We're going to have such a fun time getting to know each other. Thank you so much for the congratulations. I just got engaged last Sunday at the recording of this. It's like middle of June, if you're listening to this later on. I got down on one knee at our favorite park in Los Angeles. She's a producer for a show around here, so it's been nice to be in the same city, and she's a local Los Angelin herself. But yeah, so we're just gonna ask you both, how unique is that we have two comedian couples? Chris sort is of shaking his head as a maybe. And how unique is that we can talk about that? So we've got a few questions prepared, and then the way, you know, newlywed usually, if you write on a piece of paper, I don't think we need to worry about that. We're not going to worry about points, but just be truthful on if they actually said what you thought they were going to say. Mm-hmm. Just be honest, because that makes it a more fun game. Okay.
Is that an extra test? Are you testing your honesty?
Yeah, the first question is going to be, can you trust your spouse on anything?
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Ooh. That's a tough one.
Next question.
Yeah. I like that Jared's all the way in California right now, just like staying away from whatever mess I create tonight.
Oh, absolutely. Well, here's then the first question as comedians that I prepared for each of you to prepare an answer in your head. What is your spouse's favorite joke of yours? So which joke do you think that you personally tell is your spouse's favorite?
Oh, wow.
That's the thing I'm most curious about. So we're starting there.
Oh, my God.
So does everybody, I'm just going to start calling on people then. Do we have an idea? I'm going to start with Don and Chris. Chris, you've got 5 minutes, so it should be the easiest. You got 5 minutes to choose from, so probably the easiest to think through all the jokes in your head. What do you think Don's favorite joke is of yours? And then, Don, I want to hear if that was correct.
Okay.
I think it's a bit I did about how if you add juice to alcohol, it makes it socially acceptable to drink at any time of day. So you can be a really functioning alcoholic. You can't drink straight vodka early in the morning, but if you add juice, you're fine. So it comes off a lot better than that, by the way. But
no, I love that premise.
It's actually a whole
steam. I love a good mimosa.
Oh, nice, Jesse. Nice. Man, Jesse, maybe I should include the Steve joke in it and do a callback right there. I want to steal that from you. Anyway, sorry.
Hey, Jesse, I really like that joke that you just told.
Was that correct, Don? Was that correct, Don?
That actually was, and he does tell it better on stage.
So good.
Yeah.
Well, what about you, Don? What do you think is his favorite joke of you?
Oh my gosh, his favorite joke of mine. Oh Lord, that's such a great question.
Thank you.
I feel like I'm going to get it wrong.
It's part of the fun of the newlywed game.
I know. I don't know. It's because I went to Catholic school. I know things and by heart, you know, learned to read. I'm not telling jokes great either, right? But I can learn things by heart because I went to Catholic school. So, for example, I still know the Lord's Prayer, the Pledge of Allegiance, and all types of Merlot.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, that's good. You said Merlot, right? Like wine?
Yeah, like wine.
Nice.
Yeah.
Chris, do you like that joke?
I mean, I like that joke, but the one she does that I like the best, because I've heard it a lot and it always gets me, is she talks about how in high school she scored 2 points on the basketball team the whole year for the other team. Yeah.
Okay, let me say that.
That's good.
Yeah. Oh,
I like that joke. I like how it buries the lead so well.
Yeah. Chris and I will work on our joke for the next show.
We got delivery problems, I think.
It's.
I want to hear 5 minutes of screwdriver jokes, really.
I'm going to get to work on it.
So now Jesse and Sarah. Sarah looks like she's still been kind of mulling it over in her head. What do you think Jesse's favorite joke of yours is, Sarah?
Oh shoot, I did the wrong. Oh no. Okay. I was like, wait, I've gone back and forth 20 times. Like, which one was it again? I pick his favorite. My favorite. I think because it's his favorite to kind of tease me about, because he's heard it so many times, and so therefore I think his favorite, because we'll just be like, you know, both doing our own thing in the house, and we kind of like come to, you know, a intersection where we meet each other, and he'll just look at me and go, my dad's from Alexandria, Egypt. Cause it's like kind of, it's a bit of a lazy joke, and it's going to work like in Virginia and like other places. People will be like, okay, why is that fun? You know what I mean? But yeah, so he teases me about that. So maybe it's that one.
Is it?
It's not. But I'm not going to do the whole joke because it's very long. But my favorite joke is she has a good little rant about bra advertisements on Facebook. And one of her punchlines is her boss emails her and says, Sarah, we need to talk about the nipples. And then that's so every time I
joke. It's a clean joke, I promise.
Okay. Yeah, it is. That's as you know, R-rated as it gets.
That's as dirty as it gets. Yeah, I like working nipples into my jokes too.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bit, which I talk about it very medically, very clean. Okay. Right.
So every
it's
once
anatomical.
In a while, yeah.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll pretend like we need to have a serious talk, and I'll go, Sarah, we need to talk about the nipples.
And again, it's only in clinical situations, like when we're at the doctor together or patient first.
Right.
No, I don't blame you if between you two, that were more than just a medical discussion. I just think, you know, for a clean show, you know, maybe we keep it medical, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
What about you, Jesse? What do you think your favorite joke of yours is?
This is a tough one. But I'm going to take a swing at it and say the joke that I do. I bought a house recently and I don't know how to fix anything. I'm not a manly man. So my wife recently blew a fuse in the house. And my first reaction was, we have to move.
No, that's not the one. But I love that you chose that one. I love that because every time you do, it's a very successful joke. It works really well. But because I'm his freaking wife, and I'm his spouse. Like I'm sitting there like that happened one time, and he tells that joke how many times? Like, but joke does well. So I think that's funny that you chose that. Lit, you have one about motivational sayings. You know, I see live, laugh, love. But you know, this is how I feel. You know, die, frown, hate. And if you know, you've got shoot for the stars, and if you do, or shoot for the moon, you might end up at the stars. And his takes a different route, and it's funny. And then he brings Bill Nye into it, and who doesn't love a punchline with Bill Nye in it?
That's what I'm saying.
can't wait for July 9th and 10th in Harrisonburg, Virginia. I can't wait for July 9th and 10th to hear these great jokes.
Yeah. With better timing and delivery.
But with non-Zoom timing, I think.
Jesse's ready to go. His delivery was very smooth.
Yeah, that's good. That's true.
I think the true test is, can you do it on a podcast?
He's got a good voice too.
Yes, I told him that, but when I asked him immediately if he did voiceover stuff because I was like, now that's a voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
My next question for everybody in the newlywed game. This one might be more of a bombshell I'm staying in the guest bedroom of Don and Chris. So when I get here, so I just hope that things can be resolved by then after this question is what was the first behavior that had to be addressed for the couple when you got married? Like, so at some point after the wedding, at some point after the honeymoon, I assume, or the honeymoon phase, even I assume after that, what was like the first thing? So you got the stereotype of the like, okay, he leaves his socks on the floor or something like that. What along those lines, or it could be more deep and philosophical if need be, what was the first behavior from either side? So this is just like essentially one per couple, but we'll ask if you guys remember it the same way. What was the first behavior that had to be addressed after marriage? After the wedding.
Dang, Jared, like...
Yeah,
that's why I was like, I wanted to do something that might actually kind of twist it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I will gladly go first.
Do it, please.
Okay.
It is the first behavior that had to be addressed, and it was addressed for some years, is leaving the toilet.
Oh, well, there's a lot of candidates, and that's a really good one.
Yeah,
but I thought it was because it's still... is addressed the noises I make while I'm eating.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Actually he makes noises. So much.
I hum,
he hums. And so when we do family reunions or holiday gatherings or you know, we go out somewhere, you want to sit next to your husband? I'm like, no, I don't.
No, I know this tune.
Great.
Yeah.
What does the humming look like? Like, you do it subconsciously or you do it on purpose?
I swear it's a different frequency that only she hears.
Yeah, and I will do a demonstration. Are you ready?
Oh boy.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Here we go.
No way. That's like, good.
And I go, you can't hear that? You seriously can't hear that?
Did that not come out pre-wedding, or did you just ignore it?
You know, I think
I took her out to eat. In fairness to me, I took her to lots of dinners when we were dating
in Baltimore. So let's give some context of, you know, Okay. Misrepresentation of sound. I married misrepresentation.
I'm gonna be leaning into Annalise's jaw when she eats now. I think I want to make sure we can nip this in the bud.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah.
This is a pre-wedding conversation for me, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. You know? I love these these notes you're taking. And you deserve it, Jared, because those are some therapist level. That was a therapist level question. So
Well, yeah. I'm glad I get to be that therapist in your life now. So what are your answers?
My first answer is, what is Annalise's number? No, I'll just play it. I just tell her, good job. So, okay, I think, but I'm not sure if I said it right after we got married. No, this is what I'm going with, because on our honeymoon, so you know the timeline adds up, we're at the bar, and because I didn't know what the deal was with just how jewelry is taken care of, and I was, one day I was like, Jesse, let's take off our rings so that we didn't lose our rings. Don't worry, that's not how this ends. I didn't want to get a lot of sand in them, you know, giving these his beautiful fresh band and my engagement ring with my band that I just had put on 2 days ago. And we're at a bar one night at this place we were so excited to go, where it's one of the highest points on St. Thomas. And there's a restaurant up there. You have to take a ski lift to get up there. So excited. Go sit up at the bar. And I have nightmares of the just cutest, blonde, just most beautiful bartender in the entire world. And when Jesse sat down, she zoned in on him on my honeymoon after I locked it down. I just locked it down and signed papers. And this girl couldn't get over the Jesse was wearing Queens of the Stone Age, album called Villains. And she just loves the album. And trust me, I'm not exaggerating. That girl, I was just frozen. Now, Jesse's defense, Jesse did nothing wrong, but he didn't do what I wanted him to do, which was to say, stand up and be like, this is my wife. She's my queen. Get away from me. You're the most unattractive person in the world. Instead, he was just nice and confused and polite. And he made sure he took care of me that night. I don't mean to be, he was just nice to me. Come on, it was our honeymoon.
It's a PG-13 clean cut.
Okay. Yeah. So,
medical nipples.
Yeah. I really mean just my emotions. He was like, Sarah, that was just unusual. And we didn't have but I also regret not saying something to her. And really, I shouldn't still be mad at this person, but I am. And so I just said to Jesse, I said, hey, in the future, in that situation, just do something, stand up and declare your love for me. But kind of synonymous to that, just try to deflect it a little bit more, because I don't want to murder anybody.
Yeah. Jesse, have you gotten a chance to declare your love in public in defense of another woman's affection since then?
No, because I don't believe it ever happens. just because I don't know. I have such low self-esteem that I don't ever assume that people are attracted to me. I don't know. I know that Sarah is, and she's my wife, and that's the most important. But, my parents weren't you're a great kid, reminding me every day. So I don't ever assume anyone's flirting with me. So the good news is Sarah, since it's happened, she's only brought it up at this podcast and not any time in the last 2 years. So
that feels like sarcasm.
That's awesome.
Maybe. But no. No, I would, the thing I've been yelled at, told to fix quickly is
yelled at.
I like that. I like how you fixed that.
similar to the toilet seat, I have a tendency to tinkle on the floor a little bit. So, and I get
to dive into that right now.
Yeah.
That's like you're aiming at the floor, or maybe it's like one of those moments where it kind of splits into two and you can't stop that.
Yeah, I'm probably thinking about my stand-up set, you know, and I'm just not really paying attention to what's going on below me, you know. And I'll be honest, I'm kind of like, Sarah knows this about me, I'm kind of like a puppy dog. So like, my attention diverts very quickly. So like, when you're going number one, it's just a very boring moment where you're just kind of like, okay, I'm just kind of standing here waiting for this to be over. And I don't really pay attention to it very much. But
and
now
you forget that you're peeing.
Yeah, I guess so. And
I think so.
I think I have, to keep it PG-13, a strong flow. So okay. Like,
That feels PG to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels like an excuse, though. Everyone's healthy.
Not for nothing. You throw a few Cheerios in that bowl, it'll fix you right up.
Yeah.
Really?
Some good Target practice.
Yeah, that's what they do for kids. And little boys. Pop a few Cheerios in the bowl.
Be right back. Gotta go to Publix. Those are both two things that I yelled at you about, though. You were supposed to pick something, but we can't go over time, right?
It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
no, I was supposed to pick something about. Okay.
I think both are fine. To me, the question is: before the moment at the bar with the blonde bartender, did you ever yell at him or kindly, fastly tell him to pee into a toilet? Which one did that happen early enough on the honeymoon? Be pre bartender moment.
Heck yes! I don't know why you look confused right now. Yes.
So even before bartender moment on the honeymoon, you were telling him to mind where his urine lands.
I sure was. Yeah. Because.
So, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
No judgment. I just wanted to see the timeline on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said it to him. I don't yell at my husband. Just if anyone's child services, if you're listening right now, I don't. I really am. But yeah, he knows when a message has to be delivered and it's coming from me. So
that'll be one after this show, more than likely.
No. No Cheerios in the honeymoon suite, huh?
No.
That's so good. Don, do you want to do one more question or should we swing it back to you for our lovely conclusion?
Yeah, we'll swing it back for the lovely conclusion. Thank you.
Well, thanks for being part of it. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Jared. Thank you, Jared.
Thanks, Jared. Wow. You did awesome at that.
Yeah. It was a good time.
It was a good time. And thank you, Chris and Jesse and Sarah. All of you are so great. So great.
Woo. Woo!
Thank you.
Yes,
woo for ourselves.
No fun.
You were exceptional.
Oh, well, thank you. Big heart love to all of you. I really, really had a great time. This has been really, really fun. And we can't wait for all of you to come and perform in an X2 First. It's our first weekend of back-to-back shows at two different venues. On Friday, July 9th, we'll be at One Tribe Farm for the Outdoor Summer Fun Series in Mount Sydney with mouth-watering, fresh-off-the-farm food prepared by the amazing Chef Jordan, live music by Prophet and Garst, and an X2 comedy show. Then on Saturday, July 10th, we'll be in Harrisonburg at the Friendly City Dance Room for Comedy and Kazumba Night. It's part dance lesson, part comedy show. Learn Kazumba, a partner dance originated from Angola, Africa, from dance instructor Philip Fusaro, between many bouts of laughter with this crew. Limited tickets are available, and we'll make sure the ticket links are in the show notes for both events. And lastly, and most importantly, laughers, thanks for tuning in. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.